Hey guys, Sax here. Today's podcast is with Mactix, a Destiny 2 content creator that has grown in popularity due to his laid-back and optimistic personality, along with a wealth of game knowledge and tips and tricks for players of all levels. In this one-on-one conversation, we dive deep into his background, his journey from gamer to Twitch streamer to creator across many different platforms, and most of all, we get into the nerdy details of what it truly means to be a gaming content creator. Though this conversation is through the lens of Destiny 2, there's still a ton of gold in here for aspiring creators for any niche on YouTube. So I hope you enjoy and take away as much to apply to your channel as I have for my own channel. Thank you once again to Mactix for taking the time to chat with me, and I hope you all enjoy our conversation. Hello everyone, and welcome to another one-on-one conversation with a Destiny 2 content creator. My name is Sax, and today I have the opportunity to chat with one of the more prolific creators in the D2 space. Known best for his creative builds, easy to follow guides, and informative live streams, he's helped pave the way for aspiring creators like myself to chase our dreams of sharing our love for video games on the internet. Mactix, thanks for joining the podcast, man. How you doing today?
Hey, you made me sound really good.
It's the one job I have, literally my only job with this. And so I appreciate you being here, man.
Doing a great job.
As you know, these one-on-one conversations, they are all about our guest. And so Mactix, today, we're going to talk all about you, brother. We're going to talk about your journey. We're going to talk about things with Destiny. And then I do want to go into the nerdy side of what's it actually look like to be a creator, the highs and lows, everything in between, and kind of do that. Does that sound good to you?
Yeah, it's great.
Cool. So let's say someone comes across this, they don't know who you are. Can you give us a brief rundown, who you are, what content you make, and how do you view your content on YouTube?
Yeah, I would describe it as primarily educational, right? Educational / informative. For the longest time, it was just Destiny 2 guide content. So guides with specific activities or guides for specific builds is kind of what my channel transformed into, probably about a year and a half, 2 years in. But now it's taking on like a slight bit of entertainment style, trying to get the personality in there a little bit. That was really helpful when I started exploring some other games, like Warframe was a very big one right there, where that wasn't really informative content. That was kind of a let's play structure, more sure. So I guess would be the best way to describe it, but definitely very teaching centric is how I would describe my channel.
Is that how you viewed it when you started? Did you feel like I feel like I know more about Destiny than maybe the people around me who I play with, and I'm already teaching them, so let's broaden the reach? Because a lot of people, that seems to be their story. So I'm just interested to see if you have that overlap or what actually brought you into creating content when you did.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure if I ever had the thought that I know things that I can teach people, or I know things that a lot of other people don't know. Because in my earlier videos, I was kind of, I don't want to say chasing trends, but kind of using existing trends as inspiration, right? Which is, I think, a natural path for a lot of YouTubers starting out, engaging in things like power grind videos. Power grind guide videos is a very common one. Raid encounter guide videos and like entertainment stream highlight style videos. So I never necessarily had a conscious decision to say, oh, I know a lot more things about the game than most people do, and I can base my channel around that. The flow into making that specific type of content was more of a natural one when I kind of took a step back at all of the different things that I was trying and realized these are the things that work really, really well, and these are the videos that are really resonating with people and that they really want to see. And so I just kind of continued walking down that path because I saw it was working.
So let me ask you this. What took you from enjoyer of Destiny to content creator of Destiny at the beginning? It looked like October 2020 was right around when the channel launched. Am I correct in that thinking, or was there, yeah, was there a different time?
Do you have a guess what started it?
Well, I assume you're at home during COVID.
Yeah, a lot of us were at home. Yeah. Yeah, I was fresh out of college for my first job as a software dev, and I was working remote, and I was living in downtown Cincinnati at the time. Okay. And that was kind of height of COVID. So like you basically weren't allowed, no one was outside. And like, even if you wanted to go outside, all the restaurants were closed, like sure. All social situations were closed. So there was literally nothing to do outside of work. And yeah. when you live downtown, like, you don't have like a backyard or anything, you don't really have any, you know, you don't really have your space. So you kind of need to find something to do with your time. So after my workday concluded, after I was done, you know, I clocked out remote, I needed something to do. And sure. I was playing tons of games. I was playing tons of Destiny, right? But, there's also that like severe lack of human interaction as well. And so it kind of gives you a desire to connect a little bit more with people online, desire to get a little bit more involved in communities and stuff like that. And so that's kind of when the idea was like, maybe I'll just stream to like kill some time and, you know, see what happens with it. The channel specifically, the YouTube channel started specifically, I actually streamed first. Okay. I was streaming on Twitch for probably, I think if you said it was created in October, I want to say I started streaming in around August. So that's probably like a 2 month gap, right? That, which I don't recommend anyone do, starting on Twitch and then doing YouTube later is pretty dumb, a pretty dumb strategy. At least if your primary concern is growing, right? Sure. But my buddy Pure Chill, which tons of, you know, everyone who plays Destiny knows, he got on me. He was like, dude, you got it. Like, you're throwing, not making a YouTube channel. I was like, okay, whatever. And, like, YouTube was actually never, like, on my radar when I initially started with the whole thing. But I'm not entirely sure that making a career out of this was on my radar either.
Does that feel crazy now that it wasn't on your radar and then it has grown to where it is now?
I guess a little bit. I'm not too much. I mean, like, that's all of life, right? I mean, like, I think you can like look back at any point in life and find any singular instance that like kind of altered the course of your life forever. And it's like, man, it's crazy that if that didn't happen, like, I mean, I don't know. To me, I guess that's like, that's all of life.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's kind of everything. So I just, you know, I'm grateful for where it ended up. Sure. But, I'd like to think that even if things didn't go that way, that I'd still end up in somewhere in a state of life I'm very happy in, and in a career that I'm very happy in. And there'll be a day I'm not a content creator anymore too, and I'll be doing something else. And then there'll be a day where I'm doing something other than that next thing. And that's just, you know, that's just how it goes.
Sure.
And so I'm not, it's like, I guess it's crazy in certain ways, but, it's just, you know, everything in life's a little crazy.
Yeah. You know, yeah. I love that thought, because it's a different, you know, perspective than I think most people would get, right? Like, so for context, a little bit about me, so you know where I'm coming from when I'm asking these questions. Started my channel in February, but I've been making content locally for my clan, small group, you know, a couple hundred people. So making websites, making written guides.
I did that a little bit too, actually, funny enough. Or not websites, but I like the clan that I was in before I started making content, they were called the Banana Van.
Okay.
I wonder if any of them still play Destiny, but I would like make like PvP montages for the clan and stuff like that.
Oh, that's cool.
It's just like, it's just like fun to do.
Yeah. And so making things locally for a long time. And so this was just like my first foray into actually putting it out into the world. And so the niche that I've kind of cut out is for new and returning players. And it was super self-serving because I had a ton of our clan mates that left right after the final shape, just like a ton of people did, put it down. And then we got into Heresy. I'm like, oh snap, this season's really good. And we're coming back. Oryx is back. There were so many things tied together. We had only just heard of Rite of the Nine, but we hadn't really even, you know, we didn't even have a concept of what it actually was. We just heard Dungeon Pantheon and everyone was kind of like lit up about that. So I started making content doing that, and I've just continued doing that. So my content on my main channel.
It's funny that you bring, I did the same thing for when Banana Van kind of stopped. I made my own clan and I did the same thing. I made like raid guides for all the new raids and stuff like that. And I didn't like post them online or anything. They were just specifically for our clan Discord. I forgot that I even did that stuff until you brought that up. So I guess the onboarding ramp to me making content was maybe more predetermined than I realized it was.
Right. Yeah. Like just kind of having it in tune and wanting
that's
to
funny.
Do that.
You brought back a memory.
There you go.
I forgot about that. I forgot I did that.
And I think that's a sign of just how community based like Destiny is. Right. So I know, like I said, self-serving as it was, I had friends that I'm like, oh, I loved running through Pantheon with this crew, but they're not here anymore. And I hear Dungeon Pantheon, and I'm like, okay, well, I have no idea what this is actually going to be, but I want those players to play. Like, I want them to come back and talk to them. So I'm like, hey, I'm going to make a game, you know, I'm going to make a video and try to
do
this.
It'd be nice if everyone came back.
Right. And to be able to have those memories again. And Hopefully they'll give us a reason to do that. Okay, so we've already touched on a couple of these things just naturally with doing that, but let's talk now about some of the abilities and the skills that you've developed over time, right? So you've already touched on your background in software development. That is a very detail-oriented position, tech-savvy position. What are the things that have come more natural to you with being a content creator? And what are the things that have been harder for you as you've developed this into your full-time gig?
I think most of the grit aspects came a little bit naturally because I've always been a competitor my entire life. I played state level tennis when I was in high school. And so there's just like a lot of time and effort and practice and training that goes into that. My parents always encouraged me to be very on point with my academics. Sure. And so like there's always been a drive to like try and strive for excellence, right? And in content creation, that's extremely important. Not only from a perspective of trying to put your best effort forward, but from a perspective of being able to actually do that every single day. A lot of people, you know, obviously know that it's important to put your best creations out there whenever you do put creations out there. But yeah. I feel like sometimes there's not as much emphasis as like showing up every day, right? Yeah. Like it's not enough to be your best one day. You need to be your best 365 days. And if you can't be your best 365 days, you need to get as close as you can. Otherwise it's just going to take longer. So, that's a part of content creation that I think is really important, that I think is probably one of the main determining factors that decides whether or not someone's actually going to make it in this field, is like, how much grit do they have? How long can they hang out? How long can they like suffer and down at zero views and like try to climb their way up slowly but surely? And, so that kind of came a little bit more naturally. There's a lot of content creation is very research driven. It's very critical thinking driven. It's very adaptation driven, in a sense where like you always need to be monitoring everything, at least especially early. The more you monitor stuff, the more you grow, the more you try to kind of debrief and do a post-op on all of the things that you create, the more you get to learn from them. And those learnings can then be used to fuel your next projects, and they can be used to make them better and be used to make them have a higher chance of success, right? And so just, you know, naturally, like you said, I like kind of tech inclined, tech savvy. Getting a computer science degree is very like analytics heavy, very math heavy, very kind of like in the weeds. Sure. And so you just kind of learn to, especially with software development, I think there's this funny stigma that like software developers, their talent is that they can like bust out a bunch of code really, really quickly. Yeah, when in actuality, their talent is that they can find answers online.
Is
what their true talent is. They can understand what answer they need. They know how to go out and find it, and they know how to apply the answer to their current problem. And so that's another gigantic piece of content creation. And I would say, so those two things came to me rather naturally just because of my upbringing and just because of the career path I chose. Ones that did not come nearly as naturally to me was the ability to be thick-skinned. You're going to deal with a lot of shade when you're in this field naturally. Sure. When you put yourself in front of the world, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be too kind about what they see. And then there's also a bit of a difficulty in separating yourself from your numbers and not tying up your own self-worth and how many views you're getting, how many subscribers you're getting, how the performance and metrics of your things are doing. So those two aspects were definitely a little bit more of a journey. The former one still is a little bit. The latter one have got kind of down a little bit more. But
sure.
And then those first two items were definitely a lot. I mean, not that I didn't have to work on them at all, but
sure.
I definitely had a little bit of a advantage in those regards.
So for me, like an example of what has come natural to me is I spent a lot of time on stage. Like my family, like a very musical family. And so even though I didn't play music for a long, long time, had a lot of instances of being on stage, whether it was like a theater type thing or presentation type thing, or being in positions to do that. So the speaking, the being in front of camera, talking to camera, even live stream, like I remember it being nerve wracking the first time I turned my camera on. And then ever since, I've never once thought about it again. I'm like, like if I want it on or off, it's more if I want to turn these big lights on to shine in my eyes or not. Like, it's not about that. For me, I think it's the balance thing. I struggle, quite often with the number watching, thing and having that, because I think it's tough, you know, like sometimes you can assign.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, like you pour a lot of yourself in, like your creations are you.
Yeah.
Ultimately at the end of the day. And so when it doesn't seem like they're resonating with people, or maybe even worse, when people are responding negatively to them, like that can, sure, that can hurt, you know?
Yeah.
Can hurt feels bad. You know, it feels like literal rejection sometimes. Yeah.
I am hitting a stride. And I think if I'm building a community of people, like I have a small Discord that I've, you know, been growing over time of viewers and things, and being able to take the feedback from that and answer the questions that they're looking for answers for, you know, like direct response to that. Have you seen that experience at all, where like having a community of people has assisted in those highs and lows of the journey?
Yeah, it just, I mean, I would say I try to create my content, or just my general community and my general channel, through a more positive lens. Sure. And that's not to say that like criticisms and critiques are not allowed, at least a more positive lens as it comes to, like, at the end of the day, we play Destiny because it's a game we have fun playing.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's going to be things that are wrong with it, right? But, you know, there's some other content platforms that definitely lean a little bit more into the more negative lens. You know, far be it from me to say that's like objectively a bad thing. I'm not here to hate on what other people choose to create content on, but, it definitely, having a community that has been built around and centered around like the idea that we play this game to have fun keeps the art and act of making videos about that game fun. And I think if I didn't have a community that was really good at keeping playing the game fun, then I think a weaker version of myself would descend into creating content around why I hate the game so much and why the game sucks. Yeah. And the current version of me would probably just stop making content entirely if it like wasn't fun to engage with anymore.
Sure.
So it's been instrumental, you know, building the community is obviously very important. And I also think it's really important to make sure you represent the values that you would want in your community in the content that you create, because otherwise you're not naturally going to attract and construct a community that's representative of those values. And for me personally, at least, it's more fun to be around people that want to have fun.
Yeah. Wanting to do that. I do think it can be key at times to be in circles where people are seeing things that you might not see, right? Like the biases we all hold in the content we're doing. I find that a lot of times, especially since I've started making content, I quite frankly, I play the game less now than I ever have, just because like, I love Destiny, but like my core is not to stream, it's to make videos, and I don't have a lot of systems set up where I can do the work of capturing for my video on stream and then have that go to someone. Like I'm too small. I don't have those systems in place. So for me, if I spend 5 or 6 hours streaming, and then that turns into another like 4 or 5 hours afterwards of me doing all of the work to put that together, right? So if that's a large video, a guide video, and
yeah,
I do
that used
live,
to be me.
Yeah, it's just a lot of like behind the scenes
I'd
stuff.
I'd push back though on like, I'm too small. Why is you being too small the reason that you can't have those systems in place?
I guess the systems I'm speaking of directly is to maybe have people who I am paying to be ready to receive, like as an editor, me taking that money, like the income that I'm receiving from what I'm doing right now. I feel like I need to do all that work myself right now. So,
I felt the same way. The reason I push back on that is because one of the lessons that it took me a while to learn that I wish I would have learned a little bit earlier is investing in yourself, in a sense of understanding that there are parts of your content channel that only you can do,
mm-hmm,
versus there are parts of your content channel that other people that you trust can do. So okay, as an example, like you are the only one that can stream on your channel. You are the only one that can do voiceover. You are the only one who can show their face, right? But someone else can edit your content.
Sure.
Obviously, you need to get someone who like edits it in your vision and is consistent with the channel that you want to create. And I'm not talking just about you specifically, obviously, but anyone who would want to do content, mm-hmm, right? Because this is a lesson that took me a while to learn that I wish I learned a little bit earlier. But I don't love the idea that you have to be a certain size or have to make a certain amount of revenue to be able to justify investing in yourself and investing in your channel,
sure,
so that it can grow even further. Right now, granted, it means you might take a loss early on, because mm-hmm, if you're paying to have an editor and you're paying your expenses are higher than what your revenue is bringing in, then, you know, obviously that's only sustainable for a certain amount of time. But more likely than not, if your content is good, like if you're hovering at like how many subscribers do you have at the current moment on your main
12,400. I'm like,
yeah, right, so it's right like you're five digits, like, yep. Clearly there's an audience for, yep, your content. Like, clearly you are making things that people are interested in.
Sure.
So to me, the idea that like, oh, it's only worth expanding once I'm at like 50,000 or 100,000 or something, sure, like, it's like, well, I don't necessarily think so, because you are like, clearly people are already interested in, and yes, like maybe you'll go negative for a couple months if you try to bring in more people and expand a little bit, but more likely than not, if you continue to stick to like creating quality content, which is what got you to 12,000 in the first place,
sure,
what's more likely than not going to happen is that like bringing on additional people to your team to expand your operation is just going to take your 12,000 up higher and faster and get you into a point where you can afford to have that team a, sure, lot more quickly.
Where do you prioritize with that then? You know, for context, this has been a good launch for the channel. Edge of Fate was a really good launch for the channel as well. I think we were around 2,000 at the Edge of Fate. I think I launched this one a little north of 10K. So it's been, you know, last 28 days or so, been a good time with that. But where do you take a low five-digit thing of that sort? Because the majority of my time right now is focused in on the edit, right? So I'm writing scripts for videos. A lot of my stuff is actually returning players' guides for X, Y, and Z.
I think it's when you get to a point where you have a like relatively consistent content plan for your channel, as, mm-hmm, opposed to when you start out very early on, you're basically just trying to try whatever until you find something that works and you find, sure, something that you're good at, right? Like once you find the thing where you're like, oh, like people are consistently watching this style of video and the style of video is one that I can continue to create, that's when you start to enlist help so that you can focus on the portions of that video creation lifecycle that only you are capable of doing, probably like script writing, voiceover, if you record it on stream, doing the actual stream recording, and then you bring someone into your team who like fits your vision and fits your editing style, right? And does, sure, a good job, and who you trust, and they can take care of the parts that don't necessarily have to be taken care of you or taken care of by you so that you can continue working on the next iteration of whatever video that is in that style.
So what has the role of streaming for you played? Like how integral in the growth of your YouTube channel has streaming been for you?
Probably not that much.
Not, okay.
Not really. It's probably the inverse.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the streaming numbers, right? Like going up on Twitch, anything of that sort, you think that's a direct response to videos performing well on YouTube and kind of pushing that direction?
It's a much more searchable platform. So like, sure, generally speaking, I mean, there's very rare instances, right? Like I think you look at something like the Burnt Peanut is like that's an anomaly. Sure. Like he might nowadays, I don't keep up with his content or anything like that, but like anyone who's in the content creation space knows exactly who he is and knows how big he is. It's my understanding, I can look it up real quick too, but it's my understanding that he might be now, but he was not like super active on YouTube, at least from his video creation. Like, yeah, now he's spamming videos and they're doing pretty well, but like
I always see everyone else posting his videos. Like, you know, I don't know that I've ever seen a TikTok that actually comes from his channel.
I'm looking, like, he didn't even really start making actual full-length videos until like 9 months ago, a year ago, and he's been like on the rise pretty significantly for a while now. And that's a rare situation where like and that's like a once in a lifetime talent where like you're that entertaining,
yeah,
that you're exploding based on live streaming alone. Cause you got to like think like the only time you grow when you're live streaming is when you're live.
Yeah.
That's not sustainable. And no live content is truly evergreen. Like how many people are going back and watching Twitch VODs of streamers? Like none, right? Mm-hmm. So for 99.9% of people, the growth strategy is you make genuinely solid, compelling content on more searchable platforms. YouTube and TikTok would be the two primary ones. Although I'm not familiar with them, but I know that there is potential angles for like Instagram and Facebook and stuff like that. And then you funnel that traffic into your Twitch, and your Twitch is always going to be like the lower end of whatever, like whatever traffic you generate on those more searchable platforms. Cause anything you throw on those platforms is going to be more evergreen. It's searchable. It's like algorithmically recommended to people.
Yeah.
And it's like nothing that's live fits any of those boxes.
Do you multi-stream? Do you send anything over to YouTube?
Okay. I, on like big days. So like on like contest mode days, okay, I will. Or like, if there's like Renegades reveal stream or Edge of Fate reveal stream or Foul Show, stuff like that, like where, it's eventful, and that's partially just to kind of have like an archive, I suppose. Okay. Although it's a little bit more out of laziness. I don't think there's been a lot of dispute of like how that impacts your algorithm on YouTube and if it's okay, good or bad for it. I don't think that you're ever like really hurting yourself truly by multi-streaming, as long as you can keep up with both.
Can like I tell you what my experience has been?
Yeah.
I just want to bounce this off you. So YouTube recently started where they will just cut, they're just going to slice like the middle portion of your video into a dual format. So it'll pop up on shorts feeds on YouTube. However, before I actually got access to that system, I was doing 3 streams.
You have to manually do it, or it automatically does it for you?
Now you just click a button, you just toggle it on YouTube, and you get dual format, or you know, it'll say like dual format. And you will see now there's like a new UI for going live on YouTube. Left-hand side has the horizontal view. The right-hand side has the vertical view. And it shows
your live stream in the shorts feed, or it makes short out of your current live stream?
No, it shows your live stream in the shorts feed. However, if you wanted to do that beforehand, I could use the Atom like multi-tool inside of OBS and have a second vertical canvas that you can set up particularly. And then you get another stream key. And you can send that vertical. So if any creator who's listening to this doesn't actually have access to vertical, what they can do is they can send one to Twitch, one to YouTube, just the horizontal normal stream, like I always have, and then send a dedicated vertical feed to YouTube Shorts. I would get like 100, 250. Let's say it's a 4-hour stream. You know, you might get a couple hundred, 300 views on that. Maybe it's concurrent view time of 5, 6, 7 minutes, whatever on that. So people coming and going, I would get like 4, 5, 6,000 views, like from the shorts. And it's also like 2 or 3 minutes worth of views. Obviously the numbers are different. I know people are not actively choosing to click on it. They're scrolling through and coming up to the stream, but the subscriber count from those, I started seeing subscriber growth from people seeing that I was doing that. And that has continued now that I'm doing it natively inside of YouTube. You know, and maybe there's a world where Twitch has suffered because I've not funneled everyone over there, but I had 0 followers on Twitch at the beginning of the year. I'm at like 850. I think that's where I'm at this point. And the YouTube side of things has benefited as well. So it's been interesting for me. So I was just interested to know what your experience was with the multi-streaming piece and what your thoughts were on that.
Yeah, I mean, I never think it's necessarily a bad thing to like put your content in more places where eyes can see it. Honestly, my approach to like having a stream available in a shorts feed has always been, I have never met a person in my entire life who watches a live stream for a significant amount of time on a shorts feed. So I just assume no one really does it. So I never really looked into that. If it's netting metrics, then it's netting metrics.
Yeah.
If it's not eating a significant amount of extra effort on your end, then there's not necessarily a reason not to do it, I suppose.
Yeah, the setting it up one time. And then the other piece that I've done is when I'm having a video that's really performing well, whether it is a short or whether it's a long form video that's performing well, going live on YouTube and being able to get more eyes on just normal streams, right? Like things I would be doing otherwise. Hey guys, real quick, if you're enjoying this content, would you please consider liking and subscribing to the Sax Talks Games channel? I plan to bring even more awesome content to you guys in the new year, and you do not want to miss out. So guys, if you would, as a favor to me before the end of the year, go ahead and like and subscribe to the channel. All right, let's get back to the conversation. I wanted to talk about shorts and what that has meant to your channel and the growth of your channel, because brother, I see your face all the time on the shorts feed.
Yeah, shorts are a thing that like took me 10 different attempts to actually consistently stick with them. They're so strong for channel growth. There's a saying that any YouTube video you upload is a lottery ticket in terms of like any of them could blow up, any of them could explode. Every short is a lottery ticket with way better odds. And so now, granted, you're never going to make nearly as much revenue or probably never going to get as much like long-term engagement out of a short as like a high view short as you would a high view video. But I mean, they're not that hard to make for the most part. Typically you're splicing already made long form videos or you're just taking stream clips. And there's a lot of already integrated software in Twitch right now where you can literally take a clip and through Twitch, like put the boxes where you want to put them and send it straight to YouTube and send it straight to TikTok. So it's like, you don't even need to like download files and put it in an editor and do this and that or whatever. What I've done recently is, on my Stream Deck, there's a button that you can get. You might need to get like a Twitch plugin or something like that on the Elgato store or whatever it is. But there's a button where you can just chuck a marker in your VOD. And so I have a dedicated shorts editor. So these days, so I just anytime I hit the marker, they go scrub my VOD, see everything that I marked and edit whatever they see, edit whatever they think is going to be worthwhile up there. And it's just like, why not? You know, why not? I think I want to say shorts was like 20% of my revenue this month. Not that much extra effort. It's content that's already being made. I mean, there's certain channels that are like shorts dedicated, but like for the type of channels that like Destiny creators for the most part are probably running, like any shorts content that we make is coming from other content that is already made, whether it's a long form video or live streamed. Like very few people are making content from the ground up as a short. I mean, there's a couple shorts creators that are, and kudos to them. That's great. And cool.
It seems like they're always on the feed. They found that algorithm stickiness, right? Like they're on there. I think that your shorts have definitely done that too.
That helps a lot with live growth as well, the shorts, especially if you take elements from whatever the live stream is. So like a big recommendation that I have for anyone who's making shorts out of live form content is if you're ever making a short where you're responding to a chat message, put the chat message on screen.
Yeah.
It immediately tells people like, oh, that was a message that was in stream and they got like featured in a short. Maybe I'll go to the stream and ask a question or something like that, right?
My best tip is make sure you always got text on the screen. Just caption everything.
My guy told me about that. He said like 60% of people watch shorts without audio.
Yeah. I mean, when you're sitting on the toilet at work and you're scrolling and you don't have your AirPods with you, like,
you don't want to get caught. When he told me that, it was like the weirdest thing ever. But like
every single video, if you put the same video up, you run the same thing. If one has text and one does not, I 1000% guarantee you that video will do better when it has text on it. And with apps, like, I mean, there's a ton of apps you can use for it, but like I started with just CapCut, using the desktop version of CapCut. It was very low barrier of entry. So many things.
Is there just a built-in captioning feature?
Yep. And just literally click one button, puts it on there. You just watch the video back one time. The Destiny weapon names, it will never, ever know how to put the word Barrow Dyad. Like,
I was literally going to say it doesn't even matter if it's like 100% accurate.
That's true. That's very true. Because sometimes if things are spelled wrong, you might know more about this than I do, but sometimes you put things in there, you can say things a certain way and people engage with it. And then you're just like,
it can sometimes unironically be beneficial because if something is spelled wrong, people will comment making fun of that it's spelled wrong. And then it's just like extra algorithm fuel.
There's so many little things. So I have personally, I feel like I have found a really good rhythm with shorts. I found the snappiness. I know how to engage with it. What I struggled with was like the things that would work really well were highly informative videos. Like you said, cutting down, like if I had a listicle video that I put on YouTube as a long form, cutting out any fluff and basically just bam, 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 here are the weapons you need from episode Heresy, or here's, you know, that kind of thing. And those would perform really well. Now I'm getting to the point where I'm actually finding the rhythm when it comes to short form. Hey, this happened on stream, or maybe I was playing off stream, but I was still recording and getting those down. And I think there's just trial and error, but like you said, low barrier of entry, get things out there, especially if you're streaming, there's no reason not to be putting that stuff. And then,
yeah, if you're streaming and you're not making clips out of what you're streaming, you're trolling. And if you can't afford to pay an editor to make clips out of it, like do it yourself. It'll grow your stream faster than spamming streams ever would. Unless you think you're genuinely as funny as Burnt Peanut, in which case keep spamming streams all day long.
Well, look at someone like Queso, and Jinxie, like when they started blowing up, I don't know if I've ever watched one of their streams live, but I feel like I've been to their streams, right? Like,
no, I've seen a billion clips of them. I've never seen a video of theirs. I've never been to their stream.
And I know exactly what the vibe is on a Queso stream or what the vibe of any of those are because of what they've put out and how they've done that. And I've also heard the tip that, like, if you're going to make videos from your streams, make sure that the videos you're putting out are actually what people are going to get if they come watch you live. Because if you just do a dedicated segment and you're like, oh, I'm going to have a lot of energy for this, or I'm going to do this, that, and the next, and then all of a sudden it's just like you lose the energy. You're not even talking to chat. You're not answering questions, but that's all the shorts you put out. I feel like you're almost like misleading the audience per se. How do you feel about that?
Nah, I don't. I push back against that. I mean, but like, what do you mean when you say you're like amping up like high energy, like you're doctoring a reaction to something, you mean? And you,
possibly, or if you, I could definitely see a world where small creator listening to this, right? They're streaming to one or two people in their Discord, and they're trying to grow, right? Like they're trying to find growth, and they just heard us say, well, if you're streaming, you're trolling if you're not doing short form, right? So then they're making a video. Yeah, and I agree with you, but they make a video and it's not something that they're actually going to do. So they're not talking to potential people coming in chat, and they're not actually like this product that they're going to. Like, one doesn't reflect the other. You know, I would argue and say that the short form stuff that you're putting out, because it's coming from your stream, that is very representative of the product that people are going to come in and listen to that. Or
I guess what I would say is, like, if someone's making highly energetic shorts, but they're very low energy on stream, I would not say necessarily that the problem is that there's a mismatch between what's going out on the shorts and what's being shown on the stream. I would say the problem is that, like, you just can't be low energy on stream. Just get your energy up on the stream. Be a bear. Sure, like, sure. And the reason I say it that way is because, like, I do not think a potential solution to that would be, oh, well, I'm low energy on stream, so maybe I'll put out low energy shorts.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, it's just like, be.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're on the same
be more interactive, be more engaging. Yeah, it's like you're going to have days where you're a little tired on stream. You know, it's like it's going
to
happen.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page. Just saying, like, yeah, that focus is going to have to happen.
I guess I'm thinking of it through a lens of, like, not necessarily that you're trying to, like, consciously force, like, okay, I need to be the same way in shorts that I need to be in stream. And, like, I'm thinking of it more through a lens of, like, just put your best foot forward in your shorts and in your stream. And then you don't even have to think about, like, oh, I need to make sure it's the same, you know?
So let's talk about this now. So you had mentioned that you hit a button on your stream deck that marks things, and then you have an individual who is dedicated to doing those shorts. That is a system that you've developed, you've put in place. What are some of the systems that you do have in place that make your day-to-day as a content creator easier, more straightforward, more efficient than it was when you first started?
I just have a thumbnail guy that I trust, and I have three editors that I trust. Okay. They're always doing consistently good work. I know I can always rely on them to get me stuff timely. I know I can always rely on them to be communicative. I can always rely on them to let me know, like, what timelines look like, if they're busy, what ETAs are going to be. From, like, a architectural perspective, I guess is the way you would put it, I just have a Discord dedicated to, like, my channel plus all my editors plus my thumbnail guys. Okay. And that way there's just always communication and awareness of, like, what videos are in the pipeline. There is, like, if anyone needs information from the other, if I say to my thumbnail guy, like, hey, we have a video coming soon about this build, it's going to be this class, use this icon, utilize these icons, blah, blah, blah. And one of my editors is working on it and says, hey, can I grab the thumbnail from you? I want to use the thumbnail of it. So just, like, create an ecosystem where people can communicate with each other, and so that everyone's always on the same page is pretty important. Don't flip-flop, like, don't ping pong between DMs with all of the different people on your team.
Yeah, I think that's actually something I'm struggling with right now.
Yeah, and then the other thing, which is, like, pretty basic, but literally every single piece of footage that I have that is going to go for a particular video goes into a organized Google Drive that's all three editors and the thumbnail guy have permanent access to. Like, I don't need to flip the link and, like, click typing their email every time. Anything that I put in that folder, they have access to, and they can view. So just, like, making sure everything's structured, making sure everyone can find everything very easily.
As a creator, are you recording everything locally, or how do you handle your actual footage work?
Yeah, I just record through OBS.
Okay. So you just record local on OBS, and then you once you finish up stream or whatever you're doing, you
chuck it in drive. Yep.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, because that took me some time as well, right? Like
there might be better ways to go about that. But you know, there's been a lot of technologies that have been newly made available and developed in the 5 years since I started creating content. But I am like pretty much a perpetual if it ain't broke, don't fix it guy. So
hey,
I just this has been working for me, so I don't mess with anything.
Nothing makes me more nervous than seeing a thing pop up. Windows update, OBS update, something of that sort. I'm like, yeah, or if someone else said at my desk
10
like,
until like a month ago.
What did you say?
I was on Windows 10 until like a month ago. There's like no reason to.
Yeah, I use a NAS locally here to just hold all my all my footage and things like that, just because I probably hold on to it way too long, like way longer than I need to. Being able to purge things, but I found that it was very effective for me, for the quality of my videos, for the quality of things over time, to have those recordings. But at the beginning, right, I'm just pulling VODs down from Twitch or YouTube or wherever I'm getting that stuff from.
Yeah, I definitely did that at one point.
What would you say some of like the technical bumps and bruises, like what do you, were there any times you were like working on working on a project for a long time and something fell through and you're like, I will never make that mistake again, or something in that realm, or just any stories you want to share on that front?
Just like make sure your initial setup, your initial audio tunings, like anytime you get ready to record for the very, very first time, do like a test recording. Test it while you're in the middle of gameplay. Test to, you know, make sure you sound fine from back here versus fine from back here. Test it with the air conditioning on in the background. Test it with the fan on. Like, make sure everything sounds okay. And then, obviously, if you ever make any significant changes to your system, if you, like, change microphones, if you change computers, if you do, like, a like large, you know, if you go from Windows 10 to Windows 11, like, just kind of double-check, make sure everything's sounding ship-shape and whatnot. But other than that, I wouldn't say I haven't ever ran into like any significant tech issues, but my like background requires me to be rather diligent about like crossing the T's and dotting the I's and making sure that like everything is always looking good and looking chip shape and whatnot.
I want to focus in a little more on the destiny of it all. Okay. So we've talked about the nuts and bolts of everything out there. And I know you've spent some time doing I don't know if it started as a side quest, but it seems like it's a full-on endeavor, like this Warframe endeavor you're doing as well with that. What has your actual journey with being a content creator specifically for Destiny for such a long time? What was that like? The highs and lows and kind of riding the live service roller coaster of it all.
Yeah. I mean, early on, it's definitely tough. Like I said, you got to have a lot of grit and you got to get kicked in the teeth for quite a while and watch a lot of videos that you spend a lot of time on and put a lot of effort into just do nothing and fall into the void. But you know, I like, not to sound like dull, oh boohoo, suffering from success or anything like that, but like once I found my stride, the trajectory was rather solid. And the only time the trajectory went downward was due to things kind of out of my control with the game kind of getting into a worse state. Like, there's overall less people watching Destiny and there's not a whole lot you can do about that. I would say the one significant learning I had was the most notable video that I ever posted on my channel was the original Omnioculus playbook that was before the Witch Queen launched.
Okay.
And I remember where I was. It was February. I was on a family ski trip. I was in the ski lodge and I just like kept refreshing every 20 minutes, seeing the views skyrocket, seeing my subscriber count skyrocket. I was like, oh my God. Like that was my first video that like, dude, this is crazy.
Yeah.
And then a Witch Queen, I remade it. And then, cause it was obviously Void 3.0. And then I made a similar video with Titan Solar 3.0 in Season of the Haunted, I think is when 3.0 came out. And I was like the dumbest person in the world because then I kept trying to make like videos that were about things that were not build videos, because it took, for whatever reason, it took me like a year to figure out that like people like build videos. And so that's my biggest like kick myself in the butt situation, where I'm like, dude, if you notice that you're doing something and it's hitting and it's working, double down on that. And if it works again when you double down on it, like, congratulations, you found a gold mine, start digging. It took me, I probably lost out on a year and a half of digging that I could have had. Yeah, that's how it goes.
So doubling down on that, looking at the trends, right? Like a lot of your content is build based. I was seeing some of the 3.0 success right when, like, hey, this new Void 3.0, Arc 3.0, Solar 3.0, those things on the channel as I was kind of looking at it.
Yeah, it was right. It was like right before Lightfall is when I realized, like, oh, wait, I get it now.
Yeah.
And that took too long. Like, that's my fault. It's because I wasn't paying enough attention.
Sure.
I wasn't like post-opping my videos well enough and being like, oh, this is really, 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 really working 10 times better than anything else I'm doing. Which is not to say that like you can't make videos or you can't make content on other things.
Sure.
But I was like, you know, I look back at my channel, I'm like, dude, I was dumb. I was being dumb.
Just spending being a lot
not
of time.
Smart. Not being not smart.
So when you're looking at how much better something's performing, what are some of the key metrics that you're looking on for that? Are you looking at how long people are staying on those videos?
It can be like average view duration is an important one. CTR is an important one. Comments can be kind of misleading, because like sometimes outrage fuels comments, and so it can be like the wrong kind of attention.
Sure.
I know it's like there's no such thing as bad publicity, but like ideally you don't want to like make a career out of pissing people off. Or at least I don't want to. If I can help it, and not intentionally, at least. But viewer count for the most part, average view duration, CTR, stuff like that. Just like paying attention to, like, you know, and like you'll kind of feel it a little bit, right? You'll be like, oh, this video is like doing a lot better than the other videos.
Yeah, I have a question on here I wanted to ask you. Like, the question I wrote is, in your experience, what separates Destiny creators that fail from those who grow over time? But would you say, it kind of feels like you're leaning that way, but I don't want to put words in your mouth. Like, do you think that that's a big thing? Just not recognizing and trying to like throw too many things out there? Or I guess maybe I'll just let you answer the question.
I mean, that's always going to be like such a complex question, right? Because there's a billion variables. At the end of the day, it's always going to be like, it sounds so cliche, but it's like, it's the ones that gave up versus the ones who didn't. You are going to make a lot of videos that no one sees, and a lot of videos that you put a lot of time in, that you put a lot of effort in, that you put a lot of yourself into, that get 20 views. And it's a combination of being able to weather that storm and being able to adapt during that storm, because simultaneously, even if you have the drive and you have the grit and you never quit, if you're making the same exact style of video, if you're making your 100th stream highlight video and it's still not working, it's like, it's time to try something else. In fact, you probably should have tried something else once the 10th stream highlight video didn't really work out that well. And so it's a combination of just like being like relentless and I'm going to keep trying stuff. I'm going to keep trying stuff. I'm going to try these long form things. I'm going to try these short form things. I'm going to try this educational stuff. I'm going to try entertainment based stuff. I'm going to try competitive style stuff. I'm going to try challenge type stuff. And if you're really smart, and these are where the people who explode, this is why they explode. If you can find someone that no one else is doing, that people are interested in watching, you're automatically the best person who's best person at making content for it, and everyone's gonna flock to you. And as you're iterating, as you're continuously trying a bunch of new things, looking at the things you tried previously, what worked, what didn't work, even getting down into the nitty gritty of like, okay, so like when you go into YouTube Studio and you look at a video, you can see exactly at what points during the video what percentage of people who originally clicked on the video are still watching, paying attention to like where those sharp dips are, like, what did I do there that made so many people leave? Okay, let's not do that again. If you do a video and you notice that the intro curve is higher than usual, okay, maybe that's a good, but is my intro way shorter than usual? Did I say something during my intro that maybe got people's ears perked up and like, ooh, that is something that I'm really interested in seeing? And like getting into a rhythm of like checking this type of stuff and trying to dissect any information that's possible from it. And it's annoying. It's like, it's really meticulous and it's annoying. It's like, it's a massive pain to go into every single video a week later and look at the view graph and look at the bumps and then have the video up in another tab and skipping to that timestamp and being like, okay, like what exactly is going on here? And like jotting down notes of that. But it's like, that's the difference between people who make it and people who don't.
So this was actually the piece of information that I was talking with Aegis about that kind of spurred this entire conversation even existing. I recently had found that my TikToks and YouTube shorts and short form content of that sort was performing really well, but I was really struggling to just honestly get any traction with long form. This was right after Renegade started. I had a couple videos. I felt like they were good. Like I put some time in, but I went through and kind of did an analysis of it. And what I said to myself was like, well, why don't I just like, instead of trying to sprinkle the information throughout the video, right? Like I was trying to find ways to maybe hook people and tell them like, hey, if you stick around a little longer, I'll tell you this. I was like, you know what? F it. I'm just going to put everything at the beginning. And then, so for instance, when they finally fixed derealize in week 2 and people could get Barrow Dyad again, it was the first time people could get it again. I had looked back to The Edge of Fate. That was the most watched short I had put out, was like basically explaining to people like, hey, Barrow Dyad's not accessible right now because people kept searching it over and over and over again. So I made a TikTok intro. It was super fast cut, super information dense, everything on screen, every moment, like everything I would have done with that YouTube short. And then I said, okay, if you got what you need out of this video and you know how to run the mission, like and subscribe. If not, let's go through it. And then the back half of the video, or like the back 75% of the video was just me going through the mission step by step, things like that. Man, the amount of positive comments, things people coming through and being like, thank you for not hiding everything in the video and stuff. As someone who is way further ahead and you're down this journey, like, do you think that that is something that would be sustainable? Or do you think that that's something where I'm going to have to over time, like find and be like, okay, well, you need people to watch these videos longer?
Whatever's getting views and good traction is sustainable.
Okay.
There's no like some, I mean, like the algorithm's important, don't get me wrong, but at the end of the day, you need to remember that you're making videos for people, not for an algorithm. And so like a lot of times the best strategy for making a video is making a video that you would want to watch. And like a lot of people get too into feeding the, like, which again, the algorithm's important. So it's a balancing act, but a lot of people get too into the weeds sometimes of like, oh, well, what would the algorithm like? Like, what does the algorithm say I should do? It's like, dude, you're making videos for people. What do people want to see? And the best way that I have ever been able to answer that question is I pay really, 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 really close attention. Anytime I am casually perusing on YouTube or casually scrolling through shorts, anything that catches my eye, anything that I watch for a while, any thumbnail that I feel inclined to click on, any video that I feel inclined to watch, any video that I find is keeping my attention for a longer period of time than most videos otherwise would, I like stop myself in my tracks and ask myself why, and ask myself how I can apply whatever that thing that is keeping me engage with that content. How can I apply that to mine? Because like we all spend time on YouTube, we all watch YouTube videos, we all watch shorts, and like we know when we pull up our YouTube recommended page, there's 12 videos there, and sometimes one of them is like, whoa, like I need to, like I like I'm not I'm subconsciously like need to click on that one right now. I need to. It's like, why? Like, stop yourself. Why? Why did I click on that one? Sure. Figure it out. What is it about this one that none of the other ones are doing for me? Okay, I figured it out. How can I apply that to mine? And that's like intros, content portions of your video, graphical edits, thumbnails, titles, video topics, challenges, like stories, narratives, everything. You can do that with literally everything.
I'm still trying to figure out how I can integrate the video. It is called The Entire History of English in 22 Minutes, because that stopped me in my tracks one day, brother, and I had to sit there and watch.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, you need, and like any, it's like, that's the thing. It'll normally come from places that have nothing to do with the content that you yourself make.
Yeah.
But it's like, there's things to pull from all of this stuff.
I had literally never seen this. I've not seen this man once in my life. His name is Rob Words. That's just his thing. His entire thing is just like the history of words and why things are named things and how we got certain silent letters and certain words. And I'm just like, I've never once had that question. You've just intrigued me beyond belief. And so I genuinely, like I say that kind half joking, but like genuinely, I'm like, if you can strike curiosity.
No, I don't think it's like half joking at all. It's like a very real thing. Like someone created something that like literally had a gravitational pull on you.
Yeah.
It's like, that's how you grow.
Let me ask you this. Is there anyone that comes to mind when you think of that, that you say like, you know what, they're doing a really good job of that right now? maybe in the D2 space. You're obviously in the Warframe space as well. So there could be any kind of creator that you wanted to shout out that might be doing that well.
In terms of like recent, if we're looking like decent, or if we're looking like D2 space, like recent creator come ups, Llama is a really good example. Like he's just like the topics that he's hitting on and the topics that he's engaging with and his marketing package his thumbnail title combo is what I call marketing package.
Sure.
It's just like he's doing a solid job. Aegis is another one who does an exceptional job. Fallout Plays is another one who always does a really good job of that. His thumbnails specifically are really, really, really strong. There's another guy too. I might be getting his name wrong, but he's like a Star Wars creator, and his name's like Red 5 or something like that. Yeah, it is Red 5. If you look up Red 5, literally every single one of his thumbnail structures is identical. And it's because that thumbnail structure works really, really well.
Oh, yeah. The very vertical. Those are beautiful thumbnails.
That's just like an example of like, and creators do this all the time, right? And it works really effectively. Like another example is, I can't remember what the exact video was, but Sweatsicle made a video about him doing like every flawless raid. Yeah, I streamed until I flawlessed every raid. And it's like a thumbnail of like, he's got bags under his eyes, cans of Mountain Dew. There's a timer in the top right. There's Chick-fil-A in the corner. Honestly, I don't know if Sweat got this idea from Ludwig for the thumbnail, but Ludwig did like a couple of videos that were like the same thing. He'd like, I'm looking at right now, it says I streamed until I beat God of War. Sure. I streamed until I beat Zelda. I streamed until I beat Elden Ring. It's like the identical format. Timer in the top right, fast food, energy drinks in the bottom, like looking like you haven't slept in 9 hours. And it's like creators do this all the time where like they find something that is like working very well, and they find a thumbnail that is very captivating to them, or they find a title structure that is very captivating to them that seems to pull their attention. And they're like, ooh, that's effective. That's really, really effective. I'm going to try something like that, right? I remember I saw a thing Ludwig made, like a whole like top 5 tips for a streaming thing or whatever, like 4 or 5 years ago or something like that. And he called like this exact concept. He called like the... something like that. Yeah. Where like you see something that someone else is doing and you're like, whoa, that's a good idea. How can I adapt that for my content?
Sure.
And make something of a similar structure, right? Creators do that all the time. And it's like, again, I'm not like, and I don't want anyone to like take that as like a bad thing where it's like, it like, I don't want people to be like, oh, so like steal ideas from other people. It's like, no, dude, you're taking inspiration from things out there in the world from other creators that like are clearly working, and you're being inspired to like try and see how you can make it work in your own style and your own voice and the type of content that you're creating. And so it's like the best creators will find a way to make their version of already really good ideas.
Yeah. I had some people ask me when the Desert Perpetual came out, hey, are you going to make a guide for this? And I'm like, I don't feel like that makes any sense for me as a creator with all of the priorities I had at that time. Even though like I can very efficiently guide people through that, but playing that game of trying to, right? Like when I've been watching guide videos.
Yeah. I also think it's like, yeah, like Fallout, Kakus, and Datto have it on lock. So it's like, unless you think you can do a better job than them, not really that much a point. Or, I think is it Tom Christie is his name? He does like the Skeletor ones, like Skeletor Hades, Destiny 2 or whatever.
I've seen the Skeletor videos.
Some of his have like, I don't think it's his like aspiration to make raid guides, but like in one of his Skeletor videos, like it's a guide through the encounter, and it's really effective because he basically made like a funny guide, which is something that no one else is doing, and he did a really good job of it. So I wonder if that would be an angle, actually, if someone made like raid guides but they're like very comedic.
What do you think about playing that game though? I do find myself sometimes where it's like, oh, I'm enjoying this build, but I know that I can't consume all D2 content. So I'm like, okay, am I about to post this video because it's such a small like niche, right? Like it's about one game. There's near infinite ways to mix and match things, but there's only so many ways in the meta to perpetuate something. Do you think that that's something that creators should worry about at all? Is that something I should worry about at all? It's like, oh, well, Llama put out a Titan video today. I've been enjoying this build too, so I'm going to put my video out.
No, okay. Feels like no, it's the same. No, put your spin on it. No one owns a build, right? Obviously, I'd like, as long as you're not like copy pasting the build from another creator and then passing it off as like your own creation and acting like you came up with it on your own, like, no, it's like, and like, that's the way Destiny is going to go, especially when it comes to build videos, is like the best builds in the game are going to become well known pretty quickly. Sure. And build creators are going to pretty quickly, like, know ahead of time as well, like, what builds are going to be good. Like, there's, and sure, there will be some, like, pocket picks as well that, like, are a little more niche, a little more hidden. But it's, like every single build creator in the entire world knew that 200 grenades, that getaway artist, prismatic, feed the void, hellion was going to be a good warlock build.
Yeah.
And it's, like, just because Lava makes a video on it doesn't mean I can't make a video on it.
Sure.
It's, like, you know, who cares?
Again, it's just the getting in your head about it, right? Like, I feel like I'm striving for that, but I do feel sometimes where I'm like, oh, I have imposter syndrome on like trying to build videos personally. Just maybe it's because I'm like, I've
imposter syndrome will kill your channel faster than anything else. And like, don't get me wrong, if you try like 10 different build videos and all the viewership on them is terrible because it's like maybe that space is already extremely saturated and you're unable to break in, then it's like, yeah, then maybe it's time to take a swing at a different thing. But
sure.
No, I don't like the idea of like, I am never going to attempt to make this video, even though it's a video that I want to make because I think another creator is already making a video on a similar topic.
Well, that's good to know, because that's definitely something I've thought through.
That's applicable to the raid guides too. I mean, like, I know I just said that like Datto, Kakas, Fallout, those guys like already kind of have the raid guides unlocked. It's like, listen, if you think you can offer something to the raid guide video space that is not currently being offered and you think that you can like carve out a self of the market for yourself, like, yeah, do it.
Yeah.
And it's like the worst thing that happens is you miscalculated and it didn't get a lot of views. And it's like on to the next one.
The last thing I kind of want to touch on a little bit is with like the D2 side of things. What has collaboration yourself with maybe other creators, or whether it's like raid teams, people who have been aspiring creators and them coming up as well alongside you, what has collaboration meant to your channel? Has that been something you've seen more fruit from, or is it something where you're like, it's kind of a bunch of us on a solo ops beginning Edge of Fate style?
I think a lot of people are in this, like, I would say not great mindset of that they need collaboration to be able to effectively grow. I think a lot of people, when they're starting out creating, they're kind of like constantly trying to loop in larger creators on content that they're trying to make in hopes that simply having the name of the larger creator is automatically going to signal boost their whatever content they're making. And that's not automatically a bad idea. It's just, in my opinion, a bad idea when the content that you're making that is a collaborative piece of content is not constructed from the ground up to be a collaborative piece of content. It's just a content idea that you already came up and you're just dragging someone else into it. Like, if you're making a collaborative piece of content that could have been made with just you, then it's probably not that good of a collaborative piece of content, right? So like, if you're going to make a collaborative piece of content, it needs to be something that is not possible to create or not possible to create as well unless you have that other individual, right? Furthermore, like, and like, collaborative content is fun. It's always a good time, especially when there's like a good gel of like personalities and a good vibe created, whether it's like wholesome, happy, funny, amusing, energetic, right? There's like a ton of different like banter, all that good stuff, right? Generally speaking, collaborative content on its own will never be what sustainably grows your channel in the long term, because no matter how good of a collaborative content piece you put out, if your own personal content, your own personal streams, your own personal videos, your own personal shorts do not have the legs to stand on their own, then any traction and traffic and viewership and subscribers that you get from the collaborative content is going to vanish immediately once people start watching your non-collaborative content that does not have the legs to stand on its own. So I'm not anti-collaborative content, but your focus definitely needs to be setting up a foundation for yourself that you can reliably and consistently create on your own without having to rely on collaborations from other people. That's obviously like with the exception of like if you do a piece of content that it is inherently collaborative, like let's say like a podcast with another person or something like that. Sure. Then like that's built from the ground up to be collaborative. That's a different thing, right? But
yeah.
If your channel is non-functional and stagnant in growth, unless you have someone else involved temporarily for certain pieces of content, then it's like you need to still be focused on trying to figure out what can I put out there as an individual that resonates with people and that makes them stick around.
I think that makes a lot of sense.
As an example for you, if these types of videos were the only videos of yours that got any views whatsoever, like that's not a good situation. Sure. Right, that's a bad sign. But it's not your videos where you like show new players how to get Choir of One, Barrow Died, like show new players how to get back in the game, how to get the good weapons as they do get back into the game.
Yep.
That's where the collaborative content makes a little bit more sense, because it's supplemental to the things that you're already creating that are solid. And that's where it can be a little bit beneficial then, because when you're doing collaborative content, people are exposed to you, people are introduced to you. And then the people that are introduced to you that enjoyed their time and enjoyed the things that you did and the things that you said and the show that you put on during the collaborative content, then maybe they come over to watch your individual content, which if it's good, that can get them to stick around more long term. And then they're there for you, not because they were watching you along with someone else who they already knew. A good example is like my day one raid team is very high profile creators, right? Yep. Frostbolt, Azdacross, Benny, all those guys. I get a lot of people that like after those days that start by watching Azdacross because he's 10 times bigger than anyone else,
sure.
Probably 100 times bigger than anyone else on those days. I get like a non-zero number of people that will come to my streams in the days following those. Because I'm one of the IGLs for our raid team, so I'm the one doing the majority of the talking and callouts. I'll get a non-zero amount of people that come in my stream, and they're like, "Dude, I like the way you're doing callouts for the raid team. Like, that was awesome. Like, it was fun to listen to. It was fun to watch." And it's like, then I have people coming over to watch my stream because of like something that I did and the way that I'm carrying myself and the way that I'm acting. Whereas if my content is no good on its own, then it doesn't matter if I'm doing a day one raid with Azdacross and I'm exposed to 5,000 people while I'm on camera with him. If I'm not doing anything that's like that makes people want to watch my content, then none of those 5,000 people are ever going to consider coming over. They listen to me for a day and then they forget I exist. And when you do collaborative content, you're not always going to be everyone's cup of tea with whoever's watching the person you're collaborating with.
Being able to find people that it makes, you know, makes sense and kind of like lifts the tides of everyone.
Ten paragraphs to say collaborative content will, generally speaking, never carry you on its own.
Yeah.
Like, you need something to carry yourself with.
That went a different direction than I was thinking. I think it's really good. I was wondering as well is how has the D2 community, right, like, being alongside others, like you just mentioned, just rattling off other content creators that, you know, the vast majority of people who've been in D2 space, we've searched for a Destiny video online, we've seen stuff from yourself, Cross, Frostbolt, all these different players. What has that meant to you coming up, right? Like starting during COVID, getting opportunities. I was watching recently your vlog that you did when you went out to Bungie and getting to sit with Frostbolt and Rick Kakis and have like these mini podcasts there on site. What has that meant? Like, how has that been pretty special to kind of come up? You know, some people were there before 2020, but you know, you've come up a lot with some of these guys.
No, I've definitely come up a little bit later, like the titans of Destiny content creation, like, you know, the ones that have been around for a while, like, you know, you got like Datto, Rick, and those guys who, you know, I was watching before I was even a content creator.
Yeah.
And at first it's like very surreal, right? You're like, you can't believe you're in the position that you're in. But eventually you get to a point where you kind of understand that you are in that room for a reason.
Sure.
And you then kind of carry yourself as such in terms of like, I belong here because I've worked to get here and because I have things to offer and I have, you know, my content is of a certain quality and I've, you know, worked hard for this. And eventually you get to a point where you're kind of no longer looking those individuals as like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm sitting next to Frostbolt right now. I can't believe I'm sitting next to it. Like, they're your peers, right? And, you know, that's kind of cool in and of itself because it's, you know, it's a great honor to have peers like that. The Destiny community is a particularly special place in that, as far as I'm aware, pretty much every established content creator gets along with each other really well. Like, in every content creator kind of would ideally like to see each other do well, which cannot be said for all communities. So it's really nice to be able to have peers that are incredibly intelligent, incredibly hardworking, incredibly willing to help, who want to see you succeed, and who are just generally like good people. Like, they're solid people. They're not going to snake you. They're honest. They're loyal. They have integrity. They carry themselves with a degree of confidence that's, you know, not too proud, but also, you know, lets you know that they know that they're capable and that they believe in themselves. And so it's always really nice to be, you know, birds of a feather flock together, right? So it's nice to be surrounded by those individuals because it kind of shows you and teaches you like what you should aspire to be. And it's, you know, they all do a great job of leading by example. And it's nice to have that blueprint mapped out by, you know, those who came before, right?
They always say, like, don't meet your heroes, you know, that kind of thing. And then, like, having an opportunity to, you know, sit down. And like you just said, I mean, I've been feeling that way recently with some of the podcasts and the conversations I've been able to have. And I told Llama on our conversation, you know, there were some actions he took early on, letting me share some early content I was making, you know, in his community Discord that kind of propelled me and gave me the wherewithal in the gusto to be like, you know what, I'm gonna put some videos out publicly, not just for that that small group. And I wouldn't be here if he hadn't been cool enough to let me do that and interact and do that. So my experience with everyone I've been able to chat with, pick their brain about this side of them and just learn more about them has been that. So I've been very thankful for that. That's been my experience early on as well. And so it's nice to hear that that's other people's experiences as well, right? Like as they're moving through in meeting more and more people. So I think that's awesome to hear that.
Yeah. It's just important to keep in mind that like at the end of the day, you're just another guy. And so is everyone else. And sure. Like for better or for worse, you know,
yep.
Like we're just, you know, we're all made of the same stuff, just trying to do the best we can. And, sure. You know, you never want to put anyone on a pedestal too high, and you never want to put yourself on a pedestal too high. You just, you know, carry yourself as best you can. Whether you're making videos, whether you're sat next to other high profile creators, whether you're sat inside Bungie HQ, like you just try and act as your best self, try and, you know, carry out the responsibilities that are entrusted to you, try and continue to make whatever got you in whatever position you're in the first place. And like, you just keep doing that. Don't let your head get too big.
Well, let's do this. Let's wrap up today. I want to wrap up with a couple of quick light questions for you, just Destiny related. What is your favorite exotic weapon? All of Destiny, D1.
Yeah, probably. I've never like had too strong of a connection to any particular exotic weapon, but like, okay. The one that always pops in my brain is Witherhorde. Okay. I just think it's fun. The Praxic Blade's really cool. I can't say that now because it's like a recency bias thing, but like I wouldn't be surprised in like 2 or 3 years if like Praxic Blade, I said, was my favorite exotic weapon. And it's not even because I have I like Star Wars, don't get me wrong, but like, sure. I like a very specific era of Star Wars. Like I like clones and the Clone War. I'm not like Jedi crazy or lightsaber crazy or anything like that, but like it's just from like a usage perspective and a build crafting perspective, it's like one of the coolest exotics we've gotten. So maybe in like 2 or 3 years, that one takes the slot. But right really now, probably, is. I guess Witherhorde. Izanagi's is pretty good too.
Izzy's is sick. I was telling, I think we were talking about balance. Aegis and I were talking about the Praxic Blade's balance and stuff. I said, honestly, I feel like there was a wide spectrum of what they could have tried to do with it, how they could have made the grind for the different colors, what they, you know, the approach they could have taken. I feel like they have hit on basically every cylinder that they needed to for the Praxic Blade.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think it's fantastic.
I think the catalyst could be a little better.
The catalyst?
Or have a little bit more, like a lot of them are like, I can't see a situation where I would really use a lot of them.
Okay.
I think Hyper Blade is like the default pick, but yeah, other than that, like I agree. I think the
forget Hyper Blade's the color on grinds, there all the like, time.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Oh, Zalo Supercell might be up there since if I can pick from Destiny 1 as well.
Yeah, for
that's
sure.
That's a good one too.
Yeah, people love hearing what you guys, you know, what everyone's favorite exotic is. Okay, what is best class and why is it or is it not the Titan?
That's definitely. I mean, my honest, genuine answer is the best class because I get asked this a lot. Like, what class should I play? Like, obviously, I'm a hunter main and whatnot, but like, the best class is whatever one you have the most fun playing on.
Sure.
And ideally, if you have the time, the best class is to play all three of them because they all offer such a unique and wide array of play styles and wide array of like build crafting options that all genuinely create different gameplay loops and different. Different like engagements and experiences with all different types of content, right? So it's kind of like a corny answer, but
I kind of, you know, come into these conversations and know what people main and things. I just like to project my love for my bonk hammers. I love that I'm throwing hammers across the map now.
And I really do. I love all three classes. Like Titan's great. Warlock's awesome. Hunter's like, I like Hunter the most just because like I'm a Hunter main and like aesthetically I like Hunter the most.
Yeah.
Especially. But like they're all like all the classes are incredible. They're great.
Do you have anything major coming up? Anything you want to talk about? Anything that you want to kind of put out there for people to keep their eye on, or
not in particular?
No, just keep in touch with all the Renegade stuff.
Keep doing what I'm doing. When you're a content creator, you know, treat everything like it's big, right?
That's true. That's very true.
Not anything out of the ordinary compared to what I already got going on. More of the same. Gonna
keep grinding. That's awesome, man. Well, Mactix, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Brother, for being here. I appreciate your time. Guys, if you're still hanging out, thank you very much. Consider liking and subscribing to the Sax Talks Games channel. If you like conversations like this and want to see more of them, let us know in the comments what resonated with you. And until next time, be blessed.